Sex is important to many of us. We think of it as something that we'd like to have in our lives if we can choose. But if you have a disability, it can be less straightforward. You might even need assistance from trained professionals. There's a stoush on right now about whether people with disabilities should be able to use NDIS funds to access sex workers and sex aids. It's also sparking an interesting conversation about people with disabilities and their right to a sex life. Erica Vols has more.
Sex is a very private matter for many, but discussions about the sex lives of people living with disabilities have actually been making their way into the nation's courts. Meredith Drinkle works for CoHealth, a community health body in Melbourne. She's been following one particular case involving a woman who wanted to pay for sex workers through NDIS funding.
Earlier this year, the National Disability Insurance Agency, who are responsible for delivering the NDIS, were overruled by a federal court decision which found in favour of a 40-year-old woman with multiple sclerosis. And she, it was a four-year fight to be able to have specialised sex services funded under her NDIS funding plan. That federal court decision meant that people with a disability can pay for sex worker services under their NDIS plans.
For me, it was an extremely exciting moment. It had been a moment that I think we'd all been kind of holding our breath on. We knew it was happening and it was a long process. So when that ruling happened, I remember my Facebook feed just completely blew up with all these excited people in my community thinking of the potential and how it will help them.
That's Jess Cochran. She lives with disabilities. More from her shortly. It turns out, though, that this federal court decision may soon be nullified. That's because the NDIA and the federal government say they want the NDIS laws changed. They simply don't think that the use of NDIS funds to pay for the services of sex workers is in line with community expectations.
What's happened very recently is that the NDIS have put out a reform paper for changes in the legislation to come through next year, saying that under ordinary living expenses, that NDIS funding cannot be used to purchase the services of a sex worker or any devices that are solely for sexual stimulation. There is going to be a lot of pushback by disability advocates and organisations that this doesn't go through, particularly because this was such a landmark decision that came through after a four-year fight.
Whatever the outcome of those proposed changes to NDIS laws, this court case has highlighted that the sexual rights of those living with a disability remain a bit of a taboo topic. Jess Cochran is keen to change that. She's a writer, performer, and a disability advocate. She uses a wheelchair and lives with her support dog, Riley.
So I'm Jess Cochran from Metro Melbourne, and I'm 30 years old and live with physical and psychosocial disabilities.
A few years back, Jess did a comedy routine about sex and her physical disability, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome.
Never heard of it? Don't worry, neither has my doctor. You know Gumby, that freaky green plasticine dude from way back when? I'm basically a living version of him. It means that I'm hypermobile. I stretch in all weird and funky ways. It can be difficult, but it can also lead to some pretty awesome sex. I mean, you know, windmill, reverse windmill, upside down cowgirl with a half pike. Yeah, it's all kind of great fun and games until I pop out a hip.
So yeah, Jess has had a sex life in the past, but she's faced significant challenges and she knows that many others with a disability can too. That's why she decided to help design a course about sex called Diver Sexy.
Yeah, so it's a series of workshops. Initially, we'd planned for eight that would be focused on helping people with disabilities learn more about sexual health and sexual rights and consent and things like sexuality, and even going as far as helping them discover places that they could find aids and stuff to help them have a healthy and fun sex life.
And this was co-designed by yourself and a couple of other people who have disabilities.
Yeah, so we have a bunch of peer advocates. I think there's around 8 of us. I think so much stuff in terms of accessibility is currently designed by people who aren't disabled, and the minute we enter those spaces, we see the flaws where things could have been done better. And I think it's really important that we're brought into those spaces so that we can give our lived experience input. You go straight to the source, because we all have our own input and challenges that we've had to navigate, and therefore we're that wealth of knowledge.
So as you can see, I've also got my very lovely fuchsia electric wheelchair parked in the front room.
And how often do you use that?
Maybe a couple of days a week, just because I haven't got a modified van yet. Yeah. So
I imagine a lot of workshops will focus on issues around consent.
Mm-hmm.
What about joy?
Oh, definitely, definitely. That's our main goal, is to help these participants get that confidence and that knowledge that they need so that they can have fun and get out there and date safely. And most of all, just, yeah, enjoy that aspect of our lives, because we all have those needs.
What was the response?
It was amazing. I still can't wipe the grin off my face whenever I think about it. But people responded really well. They were incredibly happy at the end. You could kind of sense their confidence growing as the session went on. And they fed back to us that they'd learned about things that they'd never heard of or thought of before. And they were all really kind of happy to ask those kind of out there questions. I can't wait to see how this sort of thing will help people grow when we expand on it once we reach next year.
Riley is standing sentinel. He is on alert.
Avidly watching every movement. But at the same time, he'll also be tracking my heart rate and my respirations, and I guess sensing for like stress, anxiety, or I also have problems with my heart rate and blood pressure. So he'll be scoping those out too.
And is that related to your condition?
Yeah, because all the connective tissue is lax, it means that even things like my circulatory system are affected.
My first onset of symptoms was when I was 16, but I wasn't diagnosed until I was about 24, 25. And I was very lucky that I had a partner who had known me from the age of 2, and we'd actually been dating since I was 16 on and off. And he was very kind and understanding and patient, because I was also navigating PTSD from trauma too. So that meant that when things started to get serious, I'd pull back and we'd kind of have to start that slow, steady pace again. And even though we didn't know the extent of what was going on, we just knew that, yeah, my hip would pop out or I'd have pain constantly. If I said stop, or if I said we need to change position, he was, yep, no problems, no questions. And so for me, I was really lucky that I was given the opportunity to feel completely comfortable with someone to say something hurts or something's not right.
Jess's partner passed away when she was in her 20s, and finding a sexual partner has become more of a challenge.
Oh, it's been a long time, but not necessarily, I guess, because I haven't wanted to. I really have found that in comparison to when I wasn't living with a physical disability, that the dating pool's dried up a little bit. And I mean, it's hard to get out, but it's also hard to, I guess, feel confident, especially when you kind of get this sense that people are just glancing over you. So yeah, unfortunately, it's been quite a few years, but I'll keep searching, that's for sure.
The program is being run by CoHealth in conjunction with other people who live with disabilities. Meredith Drinkle is a health promotions officer at CoHealth. She says some people aren't as fortunate as Jess in being able to explore sex with a supportive partner early on in life. Many people face barriers.
This stereotype or this idea that people with a disability aren't sexual or aren't interested in sex, and even if they are, that they are heterosexual and only interested in monogamous relationships with cisgender people, when really people with a disability, like everyone, have diverse sexualities, diverse genders, diverse ways of wanting to have relationships. And so any kind of education that they are aware of often comes from a very heteronormative place. And so the barriers can be family members. The barriers are just regular stigma in society, but also having the same equal access and participation in having a sexual life.
And what about when actually having sex? I mean, there might be barriers that exist that people might not actually think about.
That's right. I mean, you know, the way we think about sex as able-bodied people, you know, it's often two people in a bedroom, on a bed, having sex. But if you have a disability, how you have sex is going to look different depending on what your needs are. You know, if you have physical disabilities, it might not be practical and safe to be in a bed having sex. You might need to be in a chair. You might need certain aids. You might need a support worker there to be able to assist you. You also might have barriers when it comes to communication, when it comes to social interactions with people in being able to have sex in the first place. And people often don't think about those kinds of things. You know, if you have a learning disability or if you, the way you communicate is not verbal, you know, the navigating the nuances of consent to be able to even have sex is going to be different for you.
So with my disability, it's cerebral palsy, which is a disability that's a lifelong disability, and it means that I can't walk independently and I can't do certain things. With my sex life, that means that I need help to do certain things. I deal with it the best I can, but you're really going to, different individuals have different ways of doing things. My name is Luke Nelson and I'm part of the Diverse Sexy Team at CoHealth. I'm a disability self-advocate for a number of organisations. I grew up in a family where whatever we need to talk about, you know, we talk quite honestly about it. But I have seen people struggle about it. They say to their family and the family goes, maybe that's not a good idea or, you know, something like that.
And where do you think that hesitancy on the part of family members comes from?
I think that in certain aspects, if the person has sex, of course, they sometimes will have children. And I think that the fear is that the parents will be taking care of the child. And that's where I think the fear is for some families. I really hope that this program can increase the awareness that people with disabilities are sexual beings, and that sex isn't a subject where people in the disability community cringe about, because I've seen it. I really hope that we can make people relax about it. It is okay to talk about sex lives. It is okay to talk about the fact that, you know, you would like to have sex one day.
So, back to the plans to change the rules around the use of NDIS funding. When Jess Cochran heard about the federal court ruling that NDIS funding could be used to pay for sex workers, she saw that as an opportunity.
For me, it was something that I was definitely really interested in looking at, accessing a sex worker, because I think, especially with PTSD, being able to experience something with someone when they're trained, and they're also trained in these settings to work with people with disabilities, so they know that if I say, hey, I need to support this joint and stuff, that they can help with that and I can be open if something's hurting or if a joint's going out.
And so, look, I imagine some people listening to this interview might be like, sex workers being paid for by government funding. What would you say to those people who are just don't understand why that should be something that government funding is channeled towards?
Well, some people with a disability, the only way that they've experienced a sexual life is through seeing a sex worker. You know, for others, they have learned more about their bodies and increased their social skills in being able to find a sexual partner through being able to see a sex worker in the first place. You know, it's reasonable for any adult to seek and experience sexual pleasure pleasure when sex is a human right.
I think if people are of the viewpoint that they can't see backing for why this funding should be used to support sex work or sex aids, they need to really think about if they had a family member or they were suddenly find themselves in a situation where they were disabled, how do you think those things would affect your sex life and your relationships?
Jess Cochran, ending that story from Erica Voles. And for more information about the Diver Sexy workshops and the planned changes to NDIS rules, head to the Life Matters homepage.